Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Alaska Patriot Network. This is Dahl. I'm your host. I'm so glad you could all find me here tonight. Tonight is Friday night, and we have Lori Ann, the host of the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann show. She'll be joining us here in a minute. You can find that show on Sunday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, right here at Blog Talk Radio. Lori Ann and I respectively switch spots on that night, so I co-host and she is the host of that show. It's great that everybody could find us here tonight. We have a great show lined up for you, a lot of content that is difficult to talk about and difficult to listen to, but is it's an essential conversation we all need to have. And so before we kick off the show and hit it off tonight, I'm going to give you all the guest call-in numbers. So if you'd like to call into the show tonight, the number is 515-602-9722. Press number 1. And that will raise your hand in the studio show board, and we'll know you want to join the conversation. It's never too late to chime in on a topic. Our chat is also open, so if you go to Blog Talk Radio, Alaska Patriot Network, you'll find the chat right there. If you follow the show, you'll get notifications when we broadcast. Sometimes we do bonus shows throughout the week. So that's like exclusive content. While Lori Ann and I get cozied in here in the studio and get our respective seats warmed, we have a little bit of music for you. So we'll be right back after the song. So the dog out, go let the dog in, put a log on the fire, but we'll be right back here with you.
Doctor says my blood pressure's down, and it's been that way since you skipped town. And I know you thought you're leaving would make me feel like screaming, but baby, I ain't even stressing out. I bet you thought I'd be getting lonely, thought I'd be getting angry, but girl, I ain't even getting mad. I've been getting laid back, baby, you should know that. I don't need your criticism, pessimism. I've been keeping it on the DL. Got a girl that keeps it real, and it's on a need to know and all you need to know, babe. Since you've been gone, I've been getting laid back. Used to have these headaches all day long, but it's disappeared since you've been gone. And that girl next door, she sees it, loves how I'm taking it easy, blows kisses at me while I'm on my lawn. Bet you thought I'd be getting lonely, thought I'd be getting angry, but I've been getting luckier than that. I've been getting laid back, baby, you should know that. I don't need your criticism, pessimism. I've been keeping it on the DL, got a girl that keeps it real. But that's all I need to know, and all you need to know, babe. Since you've been gone, I've been getting laid back. I've been getting laid back, busy getting laid back.
For the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show, Sundays 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. I promote liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you, and I hope listening to my show becomes part of your Sunday night routine.
Imagine waking up in a trunk. What is grooming? What if I told you we had a 40% increase of human and sex trafficking in our country due to COVID lockdowns? We already had high numbers to begin with. One's Purpose is an amazing organization pounding the pavement every day, helping these survivors get help. Unfortunately, they do not have the funding they need for a safe house. In the state of Oregon, we have zero safe houses for these survivors who have endured the most heinous of crimes. The time is now to get involved. The time is now to help stop human trafficking. Please go to onespurpose.com to get involved. If you need help and if you know someone who needs to get help, please contact 541-221-3448. Make a donation. Make a difference.
Okay, folks, and we are back. Welcome to the Alaska Patriot Network. My name's Dahl. I am here to entertain and inform you tonight. We are joined by Lori Ann. And welcome in, Lori Ann.
Well, hello, hello. It is Friday once again already, and glad to be here with you. And I know that, we got a lot of stuff to cover tonight, that's for sure. It has not been boring this past week and the last few days, that's for sure.
Yeah, we've got a pretty solid show tonight. And then on top of that, we've got a lot of current events that are happening right now, breaking news here in the United States with riots going on in Georgia and body cams being released and Paul Pelosi stuff, you know, shenanigans and there's a plethora. We've got pencil neck and the committee being kicked off the committee and swallow as well. But, you know, I really am glad that you could join us, Lorianne, and, you know, be my right hand gal here tonight, because we're going to have some difficult conversations tonight. We're the lead up on our stories tonight. We're going to touch base on the fentanyl crisis we have here in the United States and some of the history behind it and where it's coming from and how it's sneaking its way into our lives. And before we start that conversation, though, today is National Holocaust Memorial Day, and it commemorates the day that Auschwitz was, raided by the Russians, and the prisoners there were released, the ones that survived the atrocities. It's also a time to remember, you know, the 6 million Jews that lost their lives in at the hand of the genocide and the Nazis. There were other people that died at Auschwitz. There were millions of others that, you know, political dissidents, people of color, people that just the Nazis didn't like, period. So, with that said, you know, it's important to look at that point in time in history and not forget history, because that hate and that genocide is alive and well in the world today. And we never want that horrific act to happen again. And it was an atrocity. And we must honor those who lost their lives by fighting hard to live. And it's not just to live, but to live free. And I know that's why I show up. Lorianne shows up to give some, you know, precursors of what's going on in this world so that you can, you know, protect yourself, not only, you know, informationally, but with knowledge, because with knowledge, if you have knowledge, you have, you know, everything you will need to survive, essentially. Knowledge how to eat, how to, you know, get by and stuff. So, it's a sad time in history to have to remember. It's sad that there's even a day that commemorates something. There never should have been an atrocity like this. So, Lorianne,
yeah,
are you ready?
Definitely. I definitely agree with what you just said, and you know, I can't help but point out that we have this Remembrance Day, but we can't forget what led up to that whole extermination of Jews conducted by the Nazis, and what led up to it. Because, you know, so many of the survivors that have spoken to what happened, and the families of those that were killed and survived and experienced it, have been warning us for years that the same types of tyranny that led to what happened in Germany during World War II has been happening for years now. And so I want to point that out. Like, we want to try to think that this will never happen again. We can never allow it to happen again. And yet, you know, we are seeing a world where the same very similar pathways have been happening and are happening and very well could happen again. And like you said, is happening in different parts of the world. And so, you know, it is a humanitarian crisis that is going on around the world in so many different ways. And, you know, we can't let ourselves believe that this will never happen again, that we learned our lesson, because it's apparent that we haven't learned that lesson. And I think that, you know, we are definitely still headed down a road where we can literally see those very types of things. Like, look in China, how China treats their religious dissidents, people they don't agree with. We can see those signs happening. And so let's not ignore those signs. Let's try to learn from World War II and what happened with the Jews, and keep that in mind, and so we can recognize those steps leading up to it when they happen, and stop it before it happens again, especially to that scale. And so there, that's my commentary.
Yeah, like I said, I think the best way to remember those, you know, millions of lives lost are to live well and to fight against that type of tyranny that even escalated to that. And it was beyond tyranny. It was just a hate. And it's a terrible time. And for those that survived it and lived through it, we have so much to learn from them. And I hope we all continue to learn from their strengths and their, you know, fortitude and their stories that they have to share. So,
are you there?
I got muted by mistake. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, okay.
I got muted by mistake. So today we're gonna lead this discussion on fentanyl's war on American families' ideals and national security. And I'm going to start off with a little bit of information and statistics for you guys. And our call-in number is 515-602-9722. Press number 1. That raises your hand on the studio board, lets us know that you want to talk. We're inviting callers to call in. If you would like to share your personal, you know, story of, you know, how fentanyl has, you know, affected you or your family, your community, if you are a community advocate and what you're doing, and or if you're a, you know, community advocate and what you're doing to help curb this crisis in your community, or maybe you have some ideas or just thoughts on it. So once again, number is 515-602-9722, press number 1. So in 2022, the DEA and its law enforcement partners seized more than 50.6 million fentanyl-laced fake prescription pills. That is double the amount seized in 2021, 1% increase or better. And those are the ones they seized. The DEA also seized more than 10,000 pounds of fentanyl powder. Together, these seizures represent more than 379 million potential deadly doses of fentanyl. That much fentanyl, you guys, could kill every single American. These deaths represent fathers, mothers, brothers, sisters, our children. And you will be hard-pressed and probably in denial if you said that you have not lost or when a loved one has been affected by this crisis. This has cost American lives, It has cost the structure of our families. It has completely fractured communities. Path of fentanyl and opiates and the, you know, heroin and meth and all of that is destructive. I mean, nobody, I mean, I live in rural Alaska, but I've also lived in Seattle area. And, you know, to constantly be under like siege by thieves. You know, gosh forbid you forget to lock your car. Gosh forbid if you left something on the seat of your car that looked halfway tangible and you wake up and your windows are broke. And or you lose your life trying to protect your property. You know, an example, a mugging or something like that. I think it's important that in this discussion to understand that there was a lot of little statistics I just gave you right there. You know, a lot of doses and pounds and stuff like that. But let me break it down to like this. When you have 10 fentanyl pills, these counterfeit pills that they're, you know, everybody's heard about the rainbow pills, the Skittles, and all this stuff. 6 out of 10 of those pills have fatal doses in them. Fatal dose of heroin. Now, we're hearing more and more about accidental poisonings with fentanyl. And that, I believe, is statistically characterized by, for example, you have a curious teenager or somebody says, oh, I'm in pain, and somebody, you know, says, hey, I got a pill for you. This is not your habitual user or somebody that's, you know, in the throes of addiction. This is somebody just one and done, never done it before, who didn't have big plans to do it again. I think that these are the ones that they're characterizing as accidental poisonings. But I think that's an unfair characterization because there are millions of addicts out there who want to live till tomorrow and they don't know what's in their drugs. Now, I'm not saying that that's okay, and I'm not. What I want to say, I think, in this conversation to begin with is that what opiates and the fentanyl does to the human brain is scientifically proven. It changes your brain. And your loved ones, your coworker, your friend, or, you know, just you might not know somebody in the throes of addiction. I'm going to give you all the benefit of the doubt. I still call you a fibber or real naive, but well, they're not functioning anymore the way that they used to. Their bodies have changed. Their brain has changed. Their reward system in their brain's changed. And it's sad. It's a sickness. It becomes a complete illness. It rewires the way they think, the way they move, everything. It is almost like, I'm not going to say it's demonic possession, but damn near close to it. Now, I do not condone drug use. It's the saddest, you know, any kind of addiction is so sad. If you've ever known anybody in the throes of addiction or lost anybody, you know that the person that you love is still in there somewhere. And you never give up trying to reach that person. And I think that's why we hear a lot of discussions about, you know, families that continue to back somebody and the person goes to rehab and they're happy for them and they fall off the wagon and they do not lose their support system. They're like, let's get you back in the rehab. Let's, you know, continue to work. Because if you've ever loved anybody in the throes of addiction, you know somewhere deep down in that addiction that that person's still there and you'll never give up trying to reach them. So we have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people dying every year in the United States to opiates. 76,000 of them aboutly related to fentanyl. However, when I say fentanyl, yes, some people just use fentanyl. But what's happening is fentanyl is so cheap in comparison to some of the other drugs that they're manufacturing, like cocaine and heroin and methamphetamine and whatever else they're making out there. They're adding fentanyl to it to give it that extra kick. So, like I was saying a little bit earlier, you know, a minute ago, some of these people, they're using, and but they are not using to die. They're not suicidal. But that next hit they take of methamphetamine, or that next hit they take of heroin, or that little pill they just got may have that deadly dose of fentanyl in it. It's a silent killer. It's not loud. It's not boisterous. It's not flashy, glamorous, nothing. It sneaks its way into our communities, smuggled through the poorest border, shipped in pieces from China and assembled in Mexico and brought to our poorest border, into our bedrooms, into our schools, into our children's bodies, on our playgrounds. It's everywhere. Is, I truly believe, one of the key pieces of the puzzle to not only dismantle America, but to destroy it from within. Silent but deadly. If I were the president, I would declare this to terrorism. I would declare this a weapon of mass destruction. That's like saying, you know, these seizures, 379 million potential deadly doses of fentanyl, 379 million, those are just the ones they caught. What if each one of those were a bomb? I think they'd be acting a little bit differently. I think maybe if it went kaboom and it was more flashy and stuff, but no, it's just snuffing out Americans' lives silently, leaving a path of destruction behind it. Mother, brother, father, sister, coworker, friend, down the line. It's a chain reaction. And whole communities are grieving. And we're sick of burying our children. The key player in this is China. And the majority of 99% of the materials to make fentanyl that is shipped to Mexico, and I say assembled, but you know what I mean. They're putting the stuff all together, the key ingredients. They ship it from Wuhan. Wuhan is ground zero. It's no surprise to me when I found that out. I've been warning you, Lorianne's been warning you for a very long time that this is, China has a diabolic plan against humanity. Anybody that does not think like them and will not fall into their one world order mentality. They do it upon them, their own people. And this is their way of flexing their muscle and doing it to us too. Now,
absolutely. You know, we cannot underestimate China's influence on this. And, you know, China, you know, for decades has, as we've propped them up and they've pretended to be our friend, but, you know, China has wanted the destruction of America for a very long time. We cannot forget that. And their role in this fentanyl crisis cannot be dismissed. And the border crisis. Like you said, you know, the border crisis is not, it's like a twofold thing. These cartels, it's human trafficking, but along with the human trafficking, they're also trafficking with those trafficked humans, the fentanyl that's killing so many Americans here. And then it's also coming from Canada too. You know, they're using the, you know, the Canadian border is often overlooked. Like people aren't looking at the Canadian border. All eyes are focused on the Mexican border. So what do you think China's doing? Well, all eyes are on the Mexican border and the crisis down there. They're using the Canadian border as well, where there aren't as many eyes on it, and they're taking advantage of that.
Exactly. So a little history here. So back in around 2018, 2017, 2018, Trump's in office. Now, I don't care if you like Trump or not, whatever it is. You know, let it be what it is, but told China, knock this off, knock it off. We are going to impose some serious penalties on you if you do not quit sending these drugs to America and all these different compounds. And you are going to register all these compounds on your export list, and they will be labeled because they don't come across the water saying it would big, huge bins that say fentanyl, grade A, heading to Mexico. No, these are some very ridiculously difficult names to say that I'm not even gonna embarrass myself with online or on air trying to say these words. But so these compounds come, you know, labeled and whatnot. Well, you know, Trump had them all on export. And then he set up with the U.S. Postal Service and these border agents a processing protocol for these items that came through from China. There was a huge reduction, a 50% of what we're seeing now, reduction of shipments, because China was like, I don't know, and we're going to kind of hold off on this a little bit. And then B, on our side, with the extra eyes on the ground to intercept these things. Now, China will, they've got this export list, and it says you cannot send all these compounds. But what they do is they just change one little tiny thing or add 3 grains of rice to it, and it's something else. And they're allowed to label it as something else. And, you know, the Trump administration, they stayed upon it, and we saw numbers of, you know, interceptions increase by our side and a reduction and compliance through China. Little known fact, and this was kind of surprising when I was doing show research for this part of the show, was that when Nancy Pelosi went to Taiwan, well, we all know it really upset Xi, the panda bear, I like to call him the panda bear, or Pooh Bear. Anyway, so it really upset him. And one of the things that they took off the table was that drug export list. And what do you know? We see a skyrocketing importation, and this isn't stuff that they're not even trying to intercept it like they were a couple years ago. In fact, they took away the funding for it. The illegitimate administration here, Joe Biden. So Nancy Pelosi goes to Taiwan, pisses off China, and China says, well, I know how to get to you. And that is the truth. I'm not surprised that Pelosi pissed off China, but in the same token, I didn't realize that drug verbiage treaties was taken off the table. And it was done with no response from the illegitimate president. Fine.
So, that's really pretty pathetic. It really is. Why take that off of there? What motivation is there? And yeah, Pelosi pissed off China,
well,
but now McCarthy's
on
him to
it's
go
on
there
China
now, too.
Side. No, China took it off the table. They're like, we're not going to, you're not going to comply with us and stay out of Taiwan. Well, we're not going to comply and keep drugs out of your country. And they also said during that meeting, pertaining to that, the drugs are not China's problem. It's the users that are America's problem. And the weak, it goes to show how weak people are in America and how the government has no control of its own people. And that is what the ambassador, one of the ambassadors, was quoted as. And it goes so deep, folks. So we have eyes on the ground, eyes in our homes, grief in our heart, for our lost ones. And we're seeing our communities crumble around us. And to this administration, the porous borders, the non-enforcement with the drugs being exported. And yeah, they're not being exported into the United States, but a lot of them come through they don't just go straight to Mexico. They come on freighters through here, and that's how they were intercepting them, but unloaded into Mexico. So part of their freight, it would be a big freight ship, cargo ship, it would upload or unload some automobiles and this and that and that and this. And the previous administration had people intercepting these boats and looking at their manifests and going, oh, you can't have that chemical. And while they're here in the United States and they're right here, they can take that stuff off the boat and destroy it. And a lot of these compounds by themselves are benign. It's when you mix them together. There's no magic thing in any one of those compounds. You need all these compounds to make it. And that is how they're getting the stuff to Mexico, is through the cargo ships. And then they stop here in the United States. So United States Customs has an opportunity to stifle that supply that does come. I'm not saying everything comes through America, but 90% of it does on these ships, and then they go to Mexico and they drop off the rest of their cargo or other places too. But this is like Lorianne was saying. So that's how the fentanyl gets from China to Mexico. And then once in Mexico, there's two primary cartels, the Sinaloa cartel and the Jalisco Oh, Jessica Pola. Anyway, so there's another cartel, and they're all really, really, really bad dudes. They are smuggling in the United States, and we all know that. We've got a porous border, just like Lorianne said. And while everybody's looking at the southern border, nobody's looking to Canada. And people think, oh, it's Canadian border. Oh, what's a few Canucks? No big deal. You know, they're just escaping, you know, tyranny and you know, empty shelves and empty pantries and, you know, just really bad stuff. But if you look at the northern border, Canada last year saw 176% increase in apprehensions. 176% increase. That's a lot. And these were not love-starved Canadians pining for their love in America while, you know, locked down from COVID. These are some bad characters. They're not only, you know, drug traffickers, human traffickers and whatnot. Some of them come from known terrorist nations, just like our southern border. But what we're seeing come from the southern border is nothing but a lot of fentanyl. Now, Lorianne, what's the fentanyl crisis like in Oregon? I know you're, you know, Salem and Portland's near you. And do you see, you know, the ripple effects in your community?
You know, I haven't, you know, like I haven't really looked at the statistics and stuff. Remind me to kind of do some poking around on that, because, I mean, I know that it is a problem. You know, I know that much, especially since, you know, Oregon basically decriminalized all drugs. And, you know, we have a lot of, you know, big homeless crisis. We have here in Oregon a lot of human trafficking. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, when you think of human trafficking, you also have to think about, you know, drugs like especially fentanyl that's also coming through at the same time. And so don't have any statistics offhand for Oregon on this, but, you know, I do understand and I know enough to know that it is a problem here. Definitely a problem here. And, you know, I think that I definitely need to look up some stats on, especially like overdose deaths that are contributed to fentanyl especially. And, you know, like I said, I think that, you know, it's in, you know, especially the Portland area. You know, I don't even think that there's any kind of, there's no limit. Like, this isn't even like a big city problem anymore. You know, we are seeing fentanyl overdoses and fentanyl confiscations in even the small towns, you know. So, you know, it's a crisis on every level. It isn't just, you know, urban areas and big cities. And, you know, I don't think Oregon is an exception. Oregon is very, you know, because we have especially I-5 that runs all the way from, you know, the Mexican border, you know, in California all the way on up to Canada. So, you know, I-5 is, you know, is a very easy way for this stuff to come through either from the southern border or the northern border and get trafficked through, and then from there start moving east. And, you know, Oregon is right there in the middle as a transportation hub for human trafficking and fentanyl,
yeah,
and illegal drugs like that.
Yeah, corridor. Yep, most definitely. And you know, it's so easy. I'm not saying it's so easy to smuggle, but it's not like, you know, marijuana or pot or whatever back in the day, or when people were doing that before a lot of states legalized it. you know, you get these big stinky cumbersome bundles, and I mean, you're not going to get to the airport.
Yeah, marijuana can be smelled very easily.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but fentanyl powder, you know, is much more easily concealable.
Yes, and it only takes, you know, a few grains the size of a, you know, when you dump out your table salt, like one grain of salt. So you take 3 grains of salt, put on the table. That is enough to kill people. And it's enough to kill people by exposure only. And fentanyl is not easy treat. Overdose-wise, I'm not saying impossible, but whereas, you know, heroin, people that are overdosing on heroin are receptive to the Narcan. The fentanyl, it can take, you know, double, three, quadruple dose of Narcan just to bring a person back. And
then we can't forget, too, that fentanyl comes in a liquid form as well. So,
yeah.
You know, it's really easy to transport in a liquid form because, you know, you can put that in just about anything. You can, you know, they're confiscating fentanyl in, you know, bottles of, like, nasal spray, stuff like that that, you know, nobody
yeah.
would ever even, you know, really look for. Type of thing too. So
baby formula.
It's not even just a powder, but imagine the liquid form. Yeah, can be transported
exactly.
in just about anything.
So that you know, and that's how they're getting so much of this over the border, is that there's so many ways, and our border agents, and I really believe that a lot of the people that work in law enforcement down at the border. In fact, I know for a fact. They don't do it for the love of money. And they don't do it because it's easy, cushy. Yeah, it's not an easy, cushy job. It's a high pressure, dangerous, low pay. Not saying low pay, but couldn't pay me enough to do it. One of the most admirable jobs a person can have and keep. I really applaud our law enforcement down there at the southern border. I thank them for showing up to work every day. They're down there working so hard. And they are a side of this administration. Now, when I say we got people working hard down on the border, I'm not talking about policy. I'm not talking about the big old gaping holes or the known smuggling routes. I'm talking about the people down there that believe in this country, love this country, and respect human life. And they're working their butts off down there to try to find this stuff. And it's so hard to find because it's like Lorianne was saying. They're constantly changing. Liquid fentanyl, powder fentanyl, baby formula, Skittle fentanyl. I mean, I don't even know how they keep track, you know, keep ahead of it. So,
yeah, and you know, and I'm just looking at an article right now that, you know, gives some stats as well. Fentanyl seizures across the U.S. southern border continue to skyrocket with 9,400 pounds of the killer drug seized between October and December, a 241% increase year for year. The synthetic opioid continues to poison the country, and smugglers are skewing other drugs to bring it in, with fentanyl busts increasing 52% month-on-month in December, while heroin and methamphetamine seizures were up 1% and 4% respectively. So, I mean, you know, that's just in a three-month period, 9,400 pounds, you know, and that's just what seized, like you were pointing out, you know, that. So imagine how much more is coming through that isn't seized. You know, we can only estimate how much. And, you know, and you never know. And then we have these sickos, you know. I mean, you know, it's sad to say, but like I miss the days when we only had to worry about the date rape drug getting squirted into our drinks, you know? Like I miss those days.
Well, yeah.
Because now, now all it takes is like a dropper full of this synthetic fentanyl to literally kill you, you know, to just flat out kill you.
Yes. You know, and there was, there's been mass poisonings, law enforcement that have, especially in the beginning of the fentanyl crisis where they didn't understand, you know, the contact and, you know, not to touch it or touch. Now they glove up and they know not to touch. If somebody's suspected to have fentanyl, it's kind of like the whole car is a crime scene, you know, bring in the hazmat. And intentional overdoses are terrifying. But, you know, you're...
Yeah, and then they cut it into other drugs, you know, so you're on the street and, you know, you want to get something else, you know, just about anything else. You think that maybe you're taking a Vicodin or maybe you're, you know, taking an Oxy and, you know, but it's laced with a deadly dose of fentanyl and there you go. You know, it's like really that concerning. I mean, you really just can't underestimate how scary that really is. You know, it can show up in anything, really. You know, how do you, you know, gosh, you know, can you even trust, you know, taking an Advil anymore? You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you have a headache
exactly.
And you ask a friend for an Advil.
No, that's the truth, though. You know, and the DEA estimates that a kilogram or about 2.2 pounds of powdered fentanyl from China can fetch a few thousand dollars. If it's transformed and then these two, just take 2 pounds of this stuff and that 2 pounds is transformed into hundreds of thousands, not hundreds and thousands, but hundreds of thousands of counterfeit pills. And so that 2.2 pounds of fentanyl brings in millions on the street. And, you know, these cartels are driven by high profits. And that's, you know, that's why you're seeing the carnage on the southern border, like we're seeing. And the Mexican government's corrupt, so corrupt. We already know that. China's corrupt. And I'm sorry, folks, but do you think they really like the United States of America? Is this how you treat an ally's people? This is not just some people like profiteering off the misery of addiction. They are preying on our children. They're preying on our mothers. They're preying on our fathers, our friends, our coworkers, everybody. Nobody's immune to what they have to serve. Because like Lorianne said, you don't have to want to take it. You may just inadvertently take it. You may just be exposed to it in your environment. That is how deadly it is. There is an 11-year-old girl who died in the Tacoma, Washington area just this last fall. And initially, she had been in a, you know, rough it up in the playground thing with some other kids. And they thought her death was related to that until they did toxicology reports and found out this 11-year-old little girl died of a fentanyl overdose. Now, her family, no history of fentanyl. Police went there, couldn't find any evidence of fentanyl. They, you know, I'm sure surface touch or whatever CSI stuff they do. They couldn't find a source of fentanyl in, you know, anything she had touched at school. So this 11-year-old child, and you can't tell me this 11-year-old child went and hit somebody up on the at the bus stop on the way to school and got, you know, some hits before homeroom. This child, I believe, was unintentionally exposed to it somewhere in her environment and died from it. And we've all heard horror stories, not here in Alaska where I live, I'm not hearing it, but when I was spending time in the Seattle area briefly, you know, we had playground duty and we'd go check the playground before the kids got there to pick up needles. And we lived in a beautiful neighborhood, beautiful, and supposed to be supposedly safe. No place is safe from that kind of stuff. But now there's no way to see that grain or three of salt, size, fentanyl on the playground. Exposure, environmental exposure can kill you. And, you know, it's sad because this goes above and beyond addiction. And I'm not saying that people with addictions are not accountable to maybe how they got there or whatever. At this point, that part of the, it's just moot. It's a moot, you know, point at this point. Because, as I was saying a little bit earlier, this drug restructures the way they think. And they're not thinking rationally. They're not thinking cognitively. There is a parasite in their brain, this addiction, that must have this drug at all costs, even if it costs them their life. Lorianne, I'll give you a chance here.
Yep, I'm just listening. I'm still here. Yeah, I mean, it's really sad
with
that little 11-year-old girl. Oh no, I'm right there with you. It's really sad how this happens and the sneaky ways by which it gets through, and it's beyond, you know, it's affecting people that aren't addicted to drugs, people that have never done any kind of drug in their lives, like that 11-year-old girl. But, you know, just somehow, some way get exposed to it, and somehow it makes it through. And, you know, they're really crafty. We can't underestimate that. I mean, I remember seeing a report a couple weeks back that, you know, showing the difference between, you know, like a real prescription pill for like Oxy and a fake Oxy pill that's actually fentanyl laced. And they look almost identical. I mean, you really, it's very, very difficult to actually see the difference between the two. So you might think that you're taking a legitimate drug, you know, whether it's for pain relief or whatever. You might think that, you know, you are just taking something. So if they can mimic something like Oxy or something like that, you know that they can mimic even, you know, over-the-counter types of drugs with this stuff too. They can really make it look a lot like an ibuprofen, like a Tylenol, or a lot like something else, where unless you look really closely, you would never be able to tell the difference unless you have a trained eye. And that's the other way that, you know, this is undermining efforts to try to control this epidemic, because it is so easily and very craftily put in forms to make it look like it's a legitimate, you know, real thing when it's not. It's very easy to fool people.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, oh, the drug, it's just the drug addicts and, you know, and you want to try to dismiss it like that, and it's not that. You know, there are just way too many people overdosing on this stuff that have never done any other kind of drugs. You know, they think that they're just, you know, taking a legitimate, like, over-the-counter pill or something, and it's not that, you know, or it slipped to them in some way and something, you know, innocuous that nobody would be able to tell, that sort of thing. So, you know, yeah, it's, you know, the devastation, and we have to acknowledge the pain that the families go through when they lose somebody like this. And I guess, you know, one of the things that I would like to point out too is, you know, we could talk about the statistics and we can talk about, you know, this horror, but one thing that we need to try to keep in mind is how to spot the signs of a fentanyl overdose. If you don't know what you're looking for, you know, somebody next to you, a family member, a friend, even a stranger at the store, something like that, it, you know, we have to start recognizing, like, what are the signs of the overdose? If we don't know, then we're not going to know how to, you know, react to it. The signs of the overdose can be small and constricted pinpoint pupils, falling asleep or losing consciousness, slow, weak, or no breathing, choking or gurgling sounds, body going limp, cold and clammy skin, and discolored skin, especially in the lips and nails, like turning blue, that sort of thing. So, you know, if somebody just is acting weird like that, has those signs, you know, definitely call 911 immediately. Try to give that person as much help as possible until an ambulance can arrive. And just try to keep that person alive. You know, try to help them breathe. You know, try to, you know, try to, I think, keep them sitting, you know, somewhat sitting up so they don't, like, choke on themselves if they're gurgling and stuff like that. You know, turn them to the side, perhaps, on their sides so that they don't, you know, choke on their own stuff that they're gurgling, that sort of thing. So it's like, you know, some of it is, you know, I definitely think, like, I haven't taken a first aid course in a long time, but I'm wondering if some of those first aid courses have updated to recognize this stuff and, like, you know, what to do when you come across this to make sure somebody isn't choking, make sure that they're, you know, they might even start convulsing. So, you know, you want to make sure to put something under their head so they're not, you know, banging their head, that sort of thing, and make sure that they can, you know, they're in a position where they can easily breathe and, you know, easily get some air, that sort of thing. So we have to remember that as well.
Yes, definitely. And like I was saying, you know, the Narcan is something that takes, you know, more doses with, you know, the more fentanyls in somebody's system, the more Narcan it's going to take to revive them. And, you know, Narcan is just that, you know, it's the last ditch. It's a little tiny, you know, piece of a puzzle that we have to reverse something like that, you know, basic CPR knowledge and that type of stuff. Everything you mentioned is also really helpful. Yeah, it's just do everything you can until, you know, help arrives, and pray a lot. But I did want to get back to the China-Mexico connection. Because, like I said, there's a lot of pieces in this puzzle, and how I want people to understand how it is coming into our neighborhoods, into our homes, into our communities and our schools, and et cetera. And we already explained the, you know, chemical agents, compounds coming through and going to Mexico. Like I said, they're not, you know, it doesn't say, hey, this container contains fentanyl. It's got all these different compounds that are benign on their own, but once mixed by the cartel, creates this deadly potent. Well, it just doesn't stop there. This is a complete criminal enterprise from start to finish. So what happens is China gets the double dip in this. It's not one and done for China. They get to double dip again. Now, what they do is they use China's financial system, has been used to launder money for Mexican drug cartels for years. In a single money laundering case in November 2018, several Chinese nationals were arrested by U.S. authorities and charged with laundering between $25 to $65 million for drug cartels. According to the report, Chinese money launderers leverage encrypted mobile communication apps like WeChat to move vast sums of money from the United States to China and then back to Mexico with great speed, discretion, and efficiency. They say that once Chinese money launderers move illicit drug proceeds into China's financial system, some of that money is used to purchase consumer goods and sent back as goods or gift cards, or for more precursor chemicals. So they're recycling the money back into their economy. And then the money, the consumer goods, are all transferred back out of China to the drug cartel in Mexico. It's very difficult to track, and they're using more, you know, encrypted technology and Bitcoin and that type of stuff to, you know, hide these big transactions. So I'm not going to cut China any slack. This is a debt. It is a calculated move. That was the word I was looking for. Calculated move to systematically destroy America. Now, if you look at...
One of the many.
One of the many. But, right, so if you look at what's happening in Ukraine and, you know, and Russia, the dispute they're having, and you're seeing these death counts, and of course, you know, Mark Milley will say it's 100,000 people when it's really only 14,000, but when you're asking for billions of dollars, you know, what's a few tens of thousands? Now, why is it, and I'm not saying Ukrainian lives and Russian lives don't matter, but why is Ukraine's border is so damn important to this administration? Why are those lives so much more valuable than doing the right thing and standing against China, first with policies and then second with brute force? Because it's not only the fentanyl crisis that came from Wuhan. It was the fear germ that caused all these people to vaccinate themselves with mRNA gene-altering material, the gateway to the real virus. I'm not saying Chinese people are bad. I am saying the CCP is really, really bad. Yes. Yes, exactly.
You know, and the Chinese people are finally getting fed up. The Chinese people are finally starting to see the light, and we see more and more protests from the people as much as they can, you know, at high risk to themselves. I applaud the Chinese people that actually have the guts enough to protest against their maniacal, tyrannical government, the CCP. I applaud them because, you know, we cannot underestimate how important our First Amendment right is. We can protest in a way that we are allowed to, and we don't really have a true understanding of how much courage it takes for a Chinese citizen to actually protest their government, and knowing the lengths that their government can and will go to try to squash them, physically, financially, you name it. You know, the Chinese government is as tyrannical as they come. And so I really have to say that, you know, the Chinese people that are starting to rise up more and more, kudos to you. You are brave and courageous people. And, you know, I acknowledge that. And I can't imagine the risk that they go through just to be able to get some semblance of freedom from their tyrannical government. And resisting the fear mongering, and resisting the control, resisting the social credit system, resisting the government being able to intervene in their lives, arrest them, beat them, maybe not even ever be seen or heard from again. I mean, this is the kind of government that we're talking about, and they want the destruction of America. They want this fentanyl to kill people here in America. That is why they supply it to the Mexican drug cartels to get it into, you know, pass them through the border undetected, and, you know, and doing all these things. They want this. And the more Americans that get killed from their fentanyl at poisoning us, the happier they are. And, you know, that is, I'm saying it and I stand by it 100%. China is not our friend. We cannot allow this administration to continue to pretend like they're our friend. We have to start demanding cutting ourselves off from China in every way possible and finding every other means to take care of ourselves, to take care of what's needed, get supplies that we need from actual friendly countries, and cut ourselves off from China in every single way possible.
I agree full-heartedly. And you see what they're doing to their own, you know, citizens. Like you said, we're their enemies. And this is by design. And we're fighting, Americans are fighting a war with no support from their government, little support from their state. Some states are completely crippled by this epidemic. There's a community and every major community hub in every state of this union that is suffering from this. I don't care, even rural Alaska. And we have no way of fighting back. Well, Biden, he'll give Ukraine everything they need to keep their borders safe and the Ukrainians safe, but have left America behind. They have left America behind on our own to fight against an unseen enemy known only by name, China, the CCP. Now, yeah, Mexico's complacent in this, but they're so damn corrupt, I almost feel sorry for them to be seriously sanctioned. I say cut NAFTA. I say close the border. One life is too many. Every American life, every human life on this planet is precious. And I don't care, you know, whether you're black, you're white, you're Jew, you're Christian, you're Muslim. I don't care. You are somebody's child. And there is no greater grief than a mother or father burying their child. It's out of the natural order of things. It should not.
Absolutely.
And cannot.
Or not even burying your child.
Say,
you know, your child is in the hospital for months, you know, and you have to watch them sit there in a hospital, maybe even in a coma. You know, if your child survives it, you know, it's it's hell. It's hell. If your child, you know, it, there's no, you know, it's one thing if your child dies immediately with it, and that's horrible enough as it is, but if it's your child that overdoses and is in the hospital for several weeks and you're having to watch them go through this, that is a special kind of torture that some of these parents have to endure. And, you know, not knowing if their child's even going to survive it or not. Like, that's another special kind of hell.
Well, yeah, and when you're looking at the numbers, you know, you've got a 30% increase over the drug design or over the drug overdoses from last year alone. 30% increase. 30%'s a lot. That is a lot.
That's a hell of a lot. And it's affecting every state. I mean, like you said, in Seattle, Seattle, King County is running low on storage space for bodies amid an overdose crisis. A recent report from the county found that 70% of fatal overdoses in Seattle are fentanyl-related. It's just, and, you know, so their morgues are becoming, you know, overcrowded with all of these deaths. And then, you know, if you want to put a financial incentive behind cracking down on all this stuff, these overdoses are costing us over $1 trillion. $1 trillion a year. Drug overdoses
yeah,
are costing the U.S. economy $1 trillion a year. Imagine, you know, whatever, $1 trillion, okay? I mean, if we have to put more, instead of paying all of this money to help Ukraine, you know, we need to put that money here to combat this crisis here, because, you know, if we spent $200 billion on this crisis, then we would save a huge chunk of that $1 trillion cost in all of these overdose deaths. Privately and governmentally,
yeah,
and everything.
And when we say the drug to overdose are costing the U.S. you know, approximately $1 trillion annually, where these numbers, where the $1 trillion numbers come from, are, you know, the lost productivity caused by the early deaths, health care and criminal justice costs. There's no reparations for families who have lost their child because this illegitimate administration has left the border open. There's no reparation, and I'm not big on reparations, but you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say, you know, everybody that is affected by fentanyl is a victim of a war crime right now. And this is not, like,
yeah,
you said,
I second that.
By accident. And that's where, you know, I'm going to go back. And, you know, earlier what I was saying about, you know, this is, well, now I'm going to circle back and then lose but anyway, so yeah, it's a war crime.
And it wasn't even my fault.
And
this
it's
time.
By design. I know. Well, I have so much information. I've just like overloaded my brain tonight. But you know, you were talking about, you know, the effects of the overdoses and stuff, and all right, so I'm gonna pop Sedgway real quick to chat. So we've got Bringing It Boy is commenting here, and I just lost connection with chat again. I keep losing connection, but yeah, it's Dahl and Lorianne. So I'm hosting, and Lorianne
is
co-hosting.
The chat, I'm having to refresh it too. So, I'm losing connection. I'm having to refresh. And, it's the same thing happening with me again. And just happened again.
Yeah. So I don't understand. Is the caller Lori? So, it's Dahl and Lori Ann. And I just had to reconnect the chat again. But what we're seeing, is with this is with the, okay, then. All right. So anyway, so what we're seeing with these numbers is a lot of dollars. They say trillions of dollars, and then, they're spending billions of dollars, but I'm not seeing, anything being spent on, aside from their supposed border, funding or whatever they, a sad excuse policy that they have there. But we're not seeing a lot of numbers for, addiction treatment. And when they say that, the trillion annually, that's loss of productivity. That's repaying, the hospitals and the criminal justice cost. That's pretty poor.
Yeah, court costs, all of that stuff. Every, one overdose is a costly thing. From the hospital, the ambulance, from beginning to end, funeral costs, loss of work, insurance pay.
Well, they're not paying funeral
due.
Costs. They're not paying all that. They're talking about loss of future productivity for a human being died and, loss of productivity from that human being. That is figured into the $1 trillion. And the rest of the $1 trillion goes to the court system and the hospital. And what about the survivors of OD? Yes, your loved one survived an OD. You're so grateful, so full of hope, only to find out they have brain damage. Brain damage and brain injury from fentanyl is statistically high. Survivors that have OD'd, some of them are impaired, impacted huge. I mean, huge impacts on cognitive, motor skills, the whole gamut. Some of them come out partially unscathed. But that is, if they survive, that's years of care and years of therapy and years of medical intervention. And they're worth all that. I'm not that, but they're on their own. And I feel that people that have been impacted, and yes, doing drugs is a personal decision. It's a bad decision. Nobody should do it, but that's not why we're having the conversation tonight. This drug is so much different. It is one and done. This is not one where you can just experiment with. So that's why tonight I don't want to focus on people shouldn't do. I hate drugs and I wish that they never existed. But this is a piece of the puzzle that's so much bigger than all of us, that it goes beyond the sadness and the heartache and it, the breaking up of, the very essence of family, sense of self, everything. This is a slow death, like a death by a thousand cuts. And the CCP is doing this to us. The illegitimate administration is not addressing it. And the Mexican cartels and the Mexican government are complacent and they're a party of this. And they're not just hapless, bystanders where there's a couple bad characters, picking up the slack and making some money on the side. This is a criminal enterprise, that is bigger than all of us, that is actually a like war machine. What is happening with America and the fentanyl crisis is, and like I was saying a little bit earlier, is nothing compared, you know, Ukraine's grief is nothing compared to the grief we're experiencing here. Yeah, fentanyl, like I said earlier in the show, it's not big bombs and it's not big, you know, showy stuff, and it doesn't have a big loud noise, and it's not going to tear apart buildings. It is tearing apart families. It's tearing apart lives. And I don't know. This is something that we can address as America. We can stand up and we can write to our legislators, our representatives, our congresspeople, our Senate. Don't even bother writing to Joe in the House. Them know. That you know that fentanyl is an active, this is a piece of the war. This is a war, active war. And that you recognize active war.
You don't need a bomb going off to declare an active war anymore.
Just like
really
it's Ukraine.
It's deliberate and it's on purpose and it's planned. And, you know, it really is, and it needs to be treated as such.
Yes, bring it, it boy.
How many
chat.
Other NATO countries are dealing with a fentanyl crisis like similarly? You know, all the
well,
you know, it's not just
anything.
America. You know what I mean? Like, I'm wondering how many other, you know, if we're NATO countries and we're supposed to stand up for each other in times of war and in times of attack. Well, you know, if other NATO countries are dealing with a fentanyl crisis and China is the primary, you know, country to blame, then why isn't NATO as a whole declaring acts of war on all of their, in all of these countries? Why? Because, you know, I think we can already kind of see that World War III is coming, you know. We can't, you know, the time is going to stop when we don't, you know, when we refrain from declaring something as an act of war, you know, and denying it. You know, eventually the time is going to come where, you know, we have to declare this an act of war. And there's going to be consequences for that. And it's not going to be pretty. And I think that that's why. Nobody wants a World War III. A World War III in this day and age is going to be unlike anything that we could even imagine right now. And so nobody wants to declare this an act of war when it actually is.
Yeah, bring it, boy, in chat says asking for NATO is asking like asking FEMA to stop. That's true. I had a laugh on that one. It's true.
Very true.
It's
very
true.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, all right, so this is a couple days ago. This was released by VOAnews.com. The United States is actively seeking to re-engage China on counter-narcotics, including stopping the flow of illicit synthetic drugs like fentanyl into the U.S., said State Department Anthony Blinken when he visited Beijing in early February. So this was based on a meeting from last year, but it's a new news release. So U.S. officials admit engagement between the two countries on these issues has been limited in recent months. So Blinken went, let me break it down for you. Blinken went to Beijing last February to talk to them and say, hey, you got to stop this, supposedly, and to pick up the big guy's 10%. But then Nancy Pelosi goes to Taiwan and pissed off Sheik, Pooh Bear, the head of CCP. Well, Pooh Bear said, well, screw Nancy. We're not playing by the rules. You know, U.S. stays out of China or Taiwan. Quit messing with our stuff. And we're not gonna recognize this deal we made with the Trump administration. And they weren't really adhering to their side of things anyways, because we're in a war. They're double whammying us. And it's all coming from Wuhan. And I'm not making it up either. That's verifiable. Where they make these chemicals, where these chemicals come from in China, are sourced out of Wuhan. You know, every bad egg, every road leads back to China and Wuhan. It's like the epicenter of evil. So, anyway, so, you know, the U.S. officials are admitting engagement between the countries has been limited in the recent months. All right, so what's important is that, you know, spending any time addressing these issues with China. In fact, this administration is doing nothing to address the fentanyl crisis within America. They're allowing Soros, you know, funded prosecutors to be appointed all over the United States. Any Soros funding is bad funding. He is part of the One World Order that wants to dismantle America piece by piece. And he is working with these cartels. He is working with China. And all this crap, all these little pieces come together. And people are blind to it until your child dies.
We can't forget Mitt Romney, too. Don't forget Mitt Romney and Bain Corporation. You know, they work in tandem with Soros. You know, you look more and more into Mitt Romney and Bain Corporation and ties to, you know, corporate and, you know, everything. I mean, their hands are just as, you know, are just as dirty. And whatever Soros is funding, you can bet that Mitt Romney and Bain is behind as well.
Yes. So, you know, it's systematic. And it's undeniable what's happening. You know, and we are seeing this, and we're helpless. We're helpless. There's people that are discussing this. There's people like you and I and discussing it on our shows. There's, you know, people are engaging with their communities. They're turning to their law enforcement. And there's only so much everybody can do. We're fighting a war with no support. We are under attack here in the United States of America, and our unelected government is nowhere to be found. You're expected to pay the rules. You're expected to pay your taxes. You're expected to, you know, do all these things in society, yet it's not reciprocal. I mean, where are they?
Not at all.
It's crickets. And
exactly.
America has been, and that's why we're failing so miserably at this. We do not have the tools or resources to fight this on the large scale like it is. People have been treating this with shame. You know, they're embarrassed. They don't want to say, you know, or my husband's a drug addict and you know, or my kid. People are living in shame. Shed the shame. And I'm not saying make drugs legal and do it in the open. Let's quit stigmatizing this addiction to the point of silence, because that's been part of our greatest hurdle in all of this, is the silence. There's a lot of people out there suffering that they're not even on the radar here. These numbers, I believe, that we're seeing are highly unrepresented. And like I said, if this was a bomb going off in the street, everybody would be like, oh, what happened in my neighborhood too? And when happened in my neighborhood too? And really? 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 But no, these bombs go off silently. And the only debris left behind are broken hearts, shattered lives, and some memories, you know, of a loved one and the pain of watching them in the throes of their addiction. And like I said, this is like a pain by a thousand cuts. And those are the ones that are lucky enough to live. They're living in hell. Quality of life. They're not having fun. It's not a party. They're barely hanging on. And we need to shed the shame of this addiction if we are going to fight this like it is, a battle, a war. Lorianne?
Yeah, and, you know, and I, it's one thing, like, you know, we can't just, you know, we can't throw money at it without also demanding results. You know, because that's the other part of the equation is they love to take our taxpayer money. They love to throw money at things that's supposedly supposed to go toward, you know, all of these efforts, and yet it never happens. That's what's happening here in Oregon. 2020 is when Oregon decriminalized most drugs and, you know, offer somebody, you know, it's either $100 fine or, you know, go for a drug addiction evaluation and offer them, if needed, free treatment, you know, if they're, you know, poor income people, homeless people, to provide free treatment services. But here's the thing. Oregon, in the last 2 years, has just been collecting this money and then not opening up new treatment facilities. There's literally not enough treatment facilities to handle people actually coming in for treatment. So they're collecting all this money to pad their coffers, and they're not actually spending it on what it's supposed to be spent for. At time and time again, this is what happened. And now finally, you know, I'm seeing articles where, like, you know, people are starting to demand, like, hey, you know, this was legal. You've been sitting on it. You've been collecting our taxpayer dollars. You've been collecting them, you know. They changed how much legal marijuana taxes, along with passing that law, legal marijuana taxing revenues are now distributed more to toward the efforts of drug and alcohol and addiction treatment. And yet all of this money is not being spent on opening up new treatment facilities, on making these services available. They're just sitting on it. They're collecting it. It's systematic fraud. And the Oregonians are allowing this to happen. So, I mean, it's not that the decriminalization was bad. That's not a bad thing. The bad thing is that we have it restructured allocation for our taxpayer dollars, including the taxes, especially the taxes on legal marijuana, and they're just sitting on the money with it, other than padding their own pockets. And it's sickening. It is systematic fraud. it is defrauding Oregon taxpayers, every single one of us. And yet they're not being held accountable. So that's the other part of the equation, is it takes more than just more money and more funding. It takes accountability. And it takes us citizens ensuring and putting pressure to make sure that the funds that are being allocated are actually spent and used on what it's supposed to be used for. That's the other sickening part of the equation. And Oregon isn't the only state. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Oregon isn't the only place where this happens. But it's more obvious because Oregon is the one state that decriminalized all drugs and yet has been sitting on all this tax revenue and not spending what they need to spend to open up more treatment centers, to have more campaigns for awareness. You know, I see all these freaking sponsored ads on Facebook all the time for all this stupid shit. You know what? I want to see all that tax revenue that they've been collecting. I want to see more drug treatment centers, you know, more campaigns. You know, if I'm going to see ads on Facebook, show me the ads that are being paid for with my taxpayer dollars to help combat this drug epidemic that we have and the money that's supposed to be allocated toward it, in education, in awareness, in services, everything on down the line, instead of just pocketing that money and not doing it, you know. I don't care about half of these ads that I see on Facebook. Why isn't the money being spent on getting the message out state by state? If you have taxpayer dollars going toward fighting this fentanyl epidemic and drug overdose epidemic, and you know, and you're paying taxpayer dollars that's supposed to go toward all of these treatment programs and awareness programs and education programs, and it is not happening, you know, then we have to stand up and say something.
Well, this is akin to, like I was saying, all right, so we are at a war, an unrepresented war. We are United States of America, a republic. We are taxpayers. We're constitutionally, you know, protected. We have elected these officials to represent us and in our country's best interest, and we have been failed miserably. We are under attack. And when you say that these funds haven't been used for what they're supposed to be used for, that's like akin to the CCP coming and shooting American citizens and the military not responding. I am going to go ahead and put it out there like that. You are not being protected. You are not being represented. We are under attack by the CCP, and the Mexican government and the cartels are complacent in it. And I, for one, as a taxpayer, a mother, a compassionate human being, a patriot, I will not stand for it. And I will continue to voice this, that the U.S. government is not protecting the U.S. citizens. We are under attack by China. We are losing our loved ones, and they're treating it like it's a failed judgment, you know, moral character or something like this. And that's why, you know, I really wanted to reiterate that today's conversation is not about why people do drugs or, you know, moral failings or how they got there. This is bigger than the addicts themselves. This is bigger than America itself. And we are facing this right in the eye every day. And our government will not call it what it is. And if you're not outraged, you should be. You should be furious. And like I was saying, one death is one too many. If it was a nuclear bomb that went off and killed some people, everybody would just be all up in arms and stuff. But no, this is happening silently in our communities. Just tick, 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 tick one precious life after another, one devastation after another. I mean, that's the impact, folks. That is what we're facing.
Yeah. I mean, more people are dying of fentanyl overdoses now than people killed by firearms or car accidents combined. I mean, this is the reality of it. And, you know, it's sickening to think that way. You know, the gun deaths are overblown, but yet these fentanyl deaths supersede that. And it's like mum's the word with our politicians to actually confront this crisis.
Well, yeah.
And like we both said, call it for what it is.
Exactly. And, you know, it's exactly that, Lorianne. You know, call it for what it is. And that's what we're doing. We're calling it for what it is. This is an act of war on America, and people need to act. And you need to contact your legislators and let them know that you will not stand for this. You know what's going on in our country, and you demand that they impose sanctions on China and address this at a defensive level. That they're complacent in this too. Every inaction is a complacency. I don't see them giving Putin any leverage, any leeway or anything like that. Well, what's the difference? Oh, wait, it's not American citizens. You know, so I'm holding the government to this too. They've had long enough, they've got the information they need. They know how this is happening. They have the intel. And they're allowing it to happen. And that says a lot right there. What is their agenda? You know, I can't say it's all great. But we have some messages in chat. So think for yourself. The elites need the map
to
hide
so
they can speak properly.
I got disconnected. Sorry to interrupt you, but I just typed like a nice, good message back to think for yourself, and then chat disconnected and lost it, so it didn't okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, all right. So we got think for yourself. The elites need the masses high so they can't think properly. The elites don't want you to see how they're ripping off the people. Yes, the elites do need the masses high, and that is a really good point. Think for yourself. It's true. And when you have, you know, this war against humanity, and it seems America is, you know, at ground zero for this, they're picking people away left and right. You know, if it's not mRNA jabs, it's PIDs and the fentanyl that's coming through. People are walking around unable to function and you know, take care of themselves and have, you know, productive jobs and everything else. So we've got a message from Bring It Boy here in California. Men in suits wearing sunglasses come knocking at the door. I had put my President Trump flag up, and the city came by and said they need to do a property inspection. How ironic. All right. Well, that's California for you. I totally sympathize. A lot of people say let California do what California's doing. I know what there's a lot of patriots in California. California is not as liberal as people would like to think. It's liberal strongholds that are holding that state hostage, and their policies are holding people hostage. If you're a true patriot, bring it to boy. You're welcome in Alaska. Alaska is still safe. It's a good place to live, guys. Yeah. So we are almost out of live broadcast time. So if you want to call into the show, the number is 515-602-9722, press number one. I was really hoping for more listener input tonight, but, you know, we didn't have callers that inputted their stories and their highlights and stuff. I really, really hope
well,
that...
Well, even if you want to call in and just listen until we go into overtime, too. So definitely, if you're out there, you're listening, you're in chat, call in 515-602-9722 in the next 8 minutes, and then you can still be included in the conversation, even if you just want to sit back and listen while we go into overtime. But you got to do it before the live broadcast ends here in 8 minutes. Sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to, you know, we got people
yeah.
listening.
So,
I know you're listening out there, but call in.
Yeah. So before we, yes, we can see Russia from our back door in Alaska. We really can. That's not just a joke. We can see Russia from some parts of Alaska. So, Lorianne, why don't you go ahead and plug your show while we're still on the live broadcast. We are going to go into a little bit of overtime, but not too late tonight, folks. So make sure you call in before the end of the live broadcast if you would like to be able to chime in on the conversation. So, and otherwise, you everybody can just keep listening. It just ends, well, actually, yeah, you're going to have to call in. We do have a caller in the queue, and we will bring them in just a second. Lorianne, I want you to go ahead and plug your Sunday night show real quick before the end of the live broadcast goes.
Ah, thank you. Yes, so definitely tune in on Sunday night from 6 to 9 p.m., but we almost always go into overtime. That specific time, and so that would be 9 p.m. Eastern Time for the Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Follow the, if you're on Facebook, you can follow my page. I post a lot of what we discuss here on my page, Lucid Libertarian on Facebook. And we have a lot of stuff to cover. I know that tonight's show we've been very focused on fentanyl and this crisis, but there is so much more to talk about that we will talk about on Sunday night. I want to definitely cover more, you know, Biden documents, the Project Veritas situation with the Pfizer executive, and basically gain of function in that video that came out, and then now we have the, you know, the potential, you know, Atlanta has had some rioting tonight, and the release of the police video of in Memphis where that resulted in the death. I mean, just so much going on. And so, yeah, Sunday night, we're definitely going to be talking about a lot of stuff, so you're going to want to tune in. And then I also want to give a plug to Donnie and Cinnamon's show on Saturday nights. I usually always call in at some point on that show. It's Beyond the Mainstream, also right here on Blog Talk Radio on Saturday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Another great show with a lot of great people and regular callers and stuff. I participate in that show, so tune in tomorrow night as well. We got a weekend full of political discussions that goes on here between Dahl's show here, Alaskan Patriot Network, on late night Fridays, and then we have Donnie's Beyond the Mainstream on Saturday nights, and then my show, Lucid Libertarian, on Sunday nights here on Blog Talk Radio. So definitely tune in. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of discussion because, like I said, this past week, there's been a lot going on to discuss. Okay, so thank you very much for letting me rattle all that out here before our show ends. You got about 5 minutes left to call in if you're going to call in and go into overtime with us.
All right, so before we end the live broadcast, we're going to go ahead and bring our caller in because they've been holding patiently.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm Robert.
Welcome.
From California, a.k.a. Bring It Boy.
Hi, Robert.
And
hey, Bring It Boy.
What's your MySpace channel? Lorianne, you have a MySpace, right?
I am not
Hello?
On MySpace, but I am on Facebook. MySpace is kind of ancient ago.
I don't know if
But Robert, good to hear from you. I hope Suzette is doing well. Is Suzette there too? Or
no, in fact, she's at the hospital right now. She's been in
oh,
the hospital.
Oh, no, what's going on?
She's just, at the moment, she has some, we got struck with COVID, and that didn't help her out. And right now she has some bladder infection that they're trying to take care of her. And they're running tests on her and changing her blood, and it's kind of scary at the moment. But she's in good spirits.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Oh no!
Bring you on like that.
I'm so sorry. That's horrible.
Oh no!
Yeah. Yeah. She's been
fighting.
Oh God! Will you keep her in prayer?
I will. Thank you very much, ladies. Appreciate that. But
I appreciate you tuning in
definitely.
Tonight. Please tell her hello from me and give her a hug from me.
You got it. No problem at all. She enjoyed it. Yeah, she would like to listen to tonight. She's a little tired. I just told her that you guys were on, and she's like, oh, wish I could call in right now, but I'm tired. And I said, yeah, well, you got the nights.
Well,
yeah,
she needs
no,
to take care of herself
there,
right now.
Thank you.
Anybody's out there and you're the praying type, let's pray for Suzette and a speedy recovery and get her out of that hospital and back home with Robert.
Well, they are taking good care of her, that's for sure. So that's the best thing about it. They're really watching her. So she should be okay.
Good.
I think she'll come home Sunday. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Okay.
I haven't heard from Suzette for a while. So
yeah,
oh.
she was getting tired of meeting, and she liked me. She would listen to the shows, and she wants to get involved, but it was just too much for her at times. So, and that's she'll get there because she hasn't done her show in 3 weeks.
Well, I definitely understand, and I'm glad that you called in to let us know. Honestly.
Thank you.
Because I've kind of been wondering in the back of my head and thinking of her and like, how come I haven't heard from Suzette for a while?
I know.
I know why. And I wish it was for better reasons. I wish it's because, you went on vacation to the Caribbean or something for the last few weeks.
We did have to call up going to Ukraine. So that's probably why too. I'm just kidding.
You had me there for a second.
Okay. You got silent on me. I'm like, hey, boy, he's a tough crowd.
Yeah, I was like, what?
What are you talking about? Well, we've been so serious. It's hard to get into joke mode, I guess, because we've had a pretty intense and serious show tonight. And so, I guess our sense of humor, part of our brain just sort of checked out there for a little bit.
I apologize about my comment when I first got on there. You guys were serious about the opioid and the fentanyl and all that. And that is a serious subject. I didn't know. I thought you were talking about people that got liberalism. And that's why I was.
I know. I thought that was funny. I did think I caught that, and I thought it was awfully funny.
So I was like, well, "That's a little
bit."
But
yeah, exactly.
Right,
maybe we needed a little bit of a little bit of a comedic break, a little bit after all the intense conversation.
But there's a lot going on. It is intense. I'll tell you, you're right. With the CCP, yes, they got their hands in that. And I just heard something about YouTube has emerged with TikTok. Anybody know anything about that?
I haven't heard anything about that.
But
yeah.
I'm told that.
But not surprising. I mean,
true.
Not surprising at all, considering the level of censorship.
And that's the perfect two right there. And that really would kill a lot of speech, unfortunately.
I could go on for another hour talking about Google. which actually I'm going to probably mention on Sunday night some of the stuff, latest stuff on Google. But yeah, their Google is so culpable on every level, even just recently. You know, like if, you know, I mentioned that Project Veritas, not sure if you've seen the video, but look it up. The Project Veritas interviewed one of these execs from Pfizer and, you know, talking about basically gain of function, creating variants of COVID so as to, you know, update the vaccines and stuff. And this whole drama transpired, and oh my gosh. And, you know, it's just, it's insane. So if you haven't seen that video, I definitely want, I'm going to talk about that on Sunday more in depth, but definitely check that out because, you know, this is what's going on here. You know, it's just, you know, they're, and if they're doing that now, you know, then that gives even more credence to COVID and the COVID shots. You know, we've talked about it. I've said it, that I think that they were created in conjunction with each other. You know, you don't create the, you don't create the disease or the virus creating the cure. And it just goes right into that too. So yeah, I'll shut up about that now because I know we're going to talk about more about that on Sunday. But that's kind of where we're at in the world right now with Pfizer and the state of the country and how we're in the grips of corporate control. It just, it's crazy. It's like another act of war going on right there too, you know, with, from our own government, because obviously we've talked about Wuhan tonight at being, to be like at the heart of so much of this, including fentanyl. And so, you know, if this is happening with Pfizer, you know, it just lends credence to the funding in Wuhan and our own government with our own taxpayer dollars funding our own deaths is really what it boils down to. We are paying for all of these crises because our government is spending its money to foster it. I'll shut up now.
No, you're right. It's synthetic warfare.
Yes, it is. And that's why I said the U.S. government right now, this illegitimate administration, is complacent in the war against America. They are the insurrectionist. And
yep.
That is
and
why
we have
Cinnamon so
and or Donnie with their hand raised in the switchboard too. I'm not sure if you're ready to put them on, but we should go ahead and bring Cinnamon or Donnie on.
Yep. So that
Hi, guys.
Is
it's
one
Cinnamon.
Of the reasons. Hey, Cinnamon, welcome in.
Thank you. You can go ahead and finish now. I just wanted to say hi.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Cinnamon.
So,
hi, and sorry that we got hung up on the other night, too, when we were talking after the show or whatever in overtime, and then my T-Mobile phone hung up on me while you're in the middle of talking. So it wasn't me. It was T-Mobile decided that after like 4.5 hours, it was time to hang up on me.
I always expect it was Blog Talk.
Amazingly enough, it was T-Mobile this time.
Yeah, that's why I was saying, you know, that this is why the U.S., this illegitimate administration, is so adamant about taking away your First Amendment rights, about taking away your Second Amendment rights. That we're in a battle against a one world order, and this illegitimate administration is facilitating its doings here in the United States of America, and U.S. taxpayers are paying for it.
Oh,
through
the one thing you guys didn't mention about us not keeping China in check is we owe them everything. If they decided to call our markers in, our loans in, we would be bankrupt completely because they have loaned us so much money. And I can't tell you, I bet you every single person in government has got some kind of deal in China because that was the big market. And we know some of them that are overtly working with Chinese companies, which there's no independent Chinese companies. They're all backed by the government. And they don't think that that's a problem, where that is seriously a problem.
Well, there's also another problem,
I couldn't agree more.
With China, with the Saudi Arabia selling their oil to the other countries without using U.S. currency, with BRICS,
yeah,
that's not good at all.
No,
that's going to cripple us like real soon here.
Yeah, and China's been playing the long game on this. That's why they were the ones that started offering us money. That's why they're the ones that are going and recruiting South African or not South African, but South
yep.
American countries. And helping
Africa.
Them out, and they were doing the same thing in Africa. You know, if they're the ones that are, hey, they're the guys that helped us out and gave us the money and built this and built that. Guess who gets
yeah,
to build a military
road.
Base?
Exactly,
yep.
Right there.
And
the
Afghanistan, everything else, the Belt and Road program, hydroelectric,
yeah.
Everything else, you know. And, you know, The CCP's one thing they're not is they're not stupid, and
no.
They are ruthless, and they have been at the art of war for centuries. I mean, they have it down to a science, and it makes you wonder now that, you know, when I was doing the research for tonight's show this week, you know, was China locked down, or were they shut off from the world's eyes so that they could make their next move, so that they could bolster
both
their weaponry and everything else? And that, if that meant locking down some of the masses, because like I said, I'm not saying Chinese people are bad. I am saying the CCC is, or CCP is bad. And they are just as, the Chinese people are just as much as a victim. And, you know, I would say it's their millennials and their kid, you know, their younger generations that have been indoctrinated so heavily. It's probably the people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, that are like, whoa, we know how history repeats itself, and you guys aren't learning history like we know history because we lived history, trained to erase this stuff. It's like a Holocaust denier. They are the people behind that
exactly.
Type of stuff. There was a Turning Point interview or something I ran across while doing research. They were interviewing college students and legit college students and legit young adults. And a lot of these people did not know what the Holocaust really was, and a lot of them hadn't even heard of it. And that is one of the blessings, I will say, if there was any blessings from the scamdemic, it was the revelation of what was happening in the U.S. Education system. And I'm not saying that because parents are not engaged and or they're complacent. Oh, wait, I take that back. When your kid goes to school and they come back.
Parents trust that they can send their kids to school, you know, and be in a positive environment and actually learn things, you know, and not, you know, instead of learning about the Holocaust, they're learning about, you know, they're teaching their, you know, 6-year-old the proper pronouns. You know, how, why is that a priority? it's uncanny.
Exactly. And, yeah, I kind of lost my train of thought there. So, anyway,
sorry.
So parents were sending their kids to school. Kids come home. They've got a great GPA. You know, their SAT scores look great. They're not getting calls from the counselors or anything. Everything's got to be great and fine and dandy. Didn't realize their kid's getting a 4.0 because all they're learning about is, like Lorianne said, their pronouns. And American families, you know, they're working. Mom and dad are working. Everybody's working. And like I said, your kid goes to school. We had the assumption, I guess, a complacency that, you know, they were safe and that they were being taught things that we learned in school, that I learned in school. And that's not the case. And these kids do not know history. And it's terrifying because there's that old saying, history repeats itself. Well, here we are. Well, let's hope that's not where we are, you know. And during the scamdemic, I was quick to bring that up, that, you know, do you think that, and I hate to say this on Holocaust Memorial Day, but do you think the Jewish people lined up in cattle cars because they thought that they were going to their death? No, this was their government.
Nope.
Their government told them to do something. They were compliant. They were law-abiding citizens, just like you, just like Cinnamon, just like Lorianne. We're like, okay, government knows best. We'll
yeah.
Just, and I'm
they
not saying that
people,
they were
oh, you're refugees or whatever, and use deceit to tell
yeah,
them.
Yeah, they were going
to
a camp.
Someplace safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're putting you in someplace safe. They would, you know, the only
yeah,
reason why they got in their cars so willingly is because they thought they were going to someplace safe. And instead they were going to their death.
Yeah. And I remember reading about the Holocaust and reading Anne Frank's diary and you know, having in-length discussions about this when I was growing up in school. I mean, it was a big part of our curriculum. And I remember thinking to myself, well, I wouldn't have done that. I would have kicked and screamed and they would have just had to put me in that car dead. And that was 9-year-old doll. Now 50-year-old doll's like, well, hell, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. Nothing's changed. But that wasn't the case. Those people were law-abiding citizens and they were just doing as their government had asked, that we're going to keep you safe. That is what happens when a government or somebody that has more power than you wants to keep you safe. And tragically, all those lives were lost. And I think, like I said earlier in the beginning of the show, the best way to remember all those lives lost are by fighting harder in the future, by not allowing that history repeat itself. We cannot allow those people to have died in vain. I think that is bad karma, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, exactly. You know, and I think, you know, I like what you said, you know, with the advent of COVID, one of the positive things was these, you know, the remote classrooms and stuff. And so, for the first time, a lot of parents were witnessing what the teachers were actually teaching their kids, you know, in, you know, Zoom calls and Zoom classes and stuff. You know, parents for the first time really got a picture of what's really going on in the classrooms, what these teachers are really saying and what they're trying to teach. And parents are going, hey, wait a minute, you know, even to the point where the parent would walk into the room and the teachers would tell them to leave the room. Parents were not allowed to be in the room while their student is online in their remote class. And heaven forbid if that parent wasn't wearing a mask in their own home and it's only them and their kid. Oh, my God. You know, if they weren't wearing a mask in the background, you know, then they got backlash for that.
And Lorianne, I'm going to go out on a limb, too. And I believe that people thought, oh, great, that is the most thoughtful thing that our, you know, our schools are going to come right into our homes to keep our kids safe and stuff. I do believe, and I believe then and I believe now, we did not participate in that. My youngest son and I, we did not participate in that. That was just another way for the government to surveil our homes. And Lorianne, you nailed it when you said, hey, mom's not wearing a mask. Why is mom in the room? That was another way for surveillance in our home. And some of those programs used were China-owned programs. So that is, I don't know. I mean, prove me wrong.
With all the kids, like the parents finally figuring things out about the school and how the kids are being taught, when do you think this really was lightened, when we really found out this? What do you think, when did you really hear about this? Like 2012?
What did I hear about?
On liberal news, you saw clips of the parents being upset about this stuff and being demonized and being called terrorists. Domestic terrorists showing up at school board meetings and voicing against this stuff. That's what we saw.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just trying to, what I'm trying to ask is what do you think really started getting really heavy? Yes, we heard about it, but when do you think, like, what year? I mean, just kind of get an idea. Like I'm saying, like 2007, 2006. When do we really understand that the kids are being taught this way?
Oh, the CRT?
When indoctrination, just the kids being indoctrinated.
Well, I would say
a long time ago. I think it started when they stopped teaching cursive writing. That's how far back I think it goes.
Would you say that?
You know, that was years ago. I think that they stopped. You know, now they're starting to reinstitute it again. But you know, wasn't it? You know, like 15 years ago.
Okay.
Maybe even 20 years ago that schools started to not teach cursive writing anymore. And you know why that is? Because a lot of our original founding documents, a lot of the original documents of precedences and court cases and transcripts and things like that were all written in cursive. So if you take kids and you don't teach them cursive, then they do not know how to read these original documents. And they have to rely on somebody's interpretation, skewed interpretation of those documents. That's why.
Pretty clever. And what do you, like, okay, now would you say that being like the Bush administration, or would we go maybe probably Obama's administration? Because I remember
I'm going to go back to Bush's administration whenever they enacted the Patriot Act.
That was
a systematic dismantling of America. That was like unlocking the key and activating the ticking time bomb. And I believe that the Obama administration used, you know, a different face of authority to change the narrative of what the younger generations were learning, thinking, everything else. That there was, everything was scripted.
Like Common Core.
Yes.
Okay. So when things really start blowing out of case, though, when everything just started coming out, you know, you have the parents getting pissed off. They're starting to go to school, go to TA meetings, and kids are getting ridiculed and everything. To me, when it really started coming out hardcore is since President Trump came into office. you know, it was talked about when Obama was in office. You know, we heard about the Common Core, and we're still trying to figure out what the hell is Common Core. What is that? I looked that up at that time, and I was like, what is this? Why are these kids being taught? This is just not right. And then the kids were there. They got these ones that were actually fighting back against it. And what did they wear? They were wearing a red hat. And everything. And then all of a sudden, it just came out of nowhere. Everyone just started, wait, what's going on? The kids are learning what? They're not knowing. They don't know how to do this. They're passing grades, but they're stupid. These kids are dumb, but they think they know everything. It just really escalated by about then, when we really started going, hey, wait a minute, what's going on? And what you're saying tonight, it's like, why did the door get opened then?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. Well, I kind of was thinking, because I have friends of mine that have been, little girls that they're growing up now, and what they think of how things are is just mind-boggling. It's just like, I can't even talk to one of them. I don't even want to have a conversation with her, because it's just what she says is just like, oh my goodness, girl, you have no idea. And I look at my buddy, I go, where were you, man? Where were you when this was going on? And he's like, he had no idea.
Well, you know, and the even sadder part is not only are they not being taught properly, but what they are being taught is to resist the truth, to dismiss the truth. So you try to, you know, so they've been so indoctrinated that even when you present them with actual proof, this is, you know, and we see it more and more, like you present them with actual proof of something and they won't even watch it, they won't even read it, they'll dismiss it. They're training our kids that way as well, like, you know, indoctrinating them so expertly that even when presented with evidence to the contrary of what they've been indoctrinated to believe, they will immediately dismiss it. They won't even give it their time. And that is actually the true genius of it. This is taxpayer dollars that our government has spent on all of these mind control. You think MK Ultra was bad? Like, we are like 10 times, you know, past the point of MK Ultra when it comes to mind control that our government has been behind. And that is, you know, and the number one way to do it is get the kids when their minds are the most open, when their minds are the most trying to learn about the world, learn about their reality, learn about who they are. Get them at that right point in life where you can indoctrinate them to the point where getting them to see the truth is even harder later on in life. And they will completely dismiss it because it's like, it's just like programming, you know? It's total programming that's been going on. And we don't want to acknowledge it, but it's true. And our Department of Education has been a key player in this indoctrination, in this mind control to, you know, well, when I was in school, our textbook said this, and this is the truth. And that's what they'll believe for the rest of their lives, and it's hard, you know, it's like a concrete wall trying to break through.
That's one thing you said right there. What we were taught in their schools, okay, whatever news we heard, that we had to take that for factual truth, because why would the newspapers lie? Why would our news stations lie? We didn't have the internet yet. So we had to take that as, you know, that's the truth. So you go from there. They had us already indoctrinated where this is what you're being taught, and what happened in World War II, this is how it started, and don't worry about the bankers. You know, now what I know about what happened in history and life right now, I am so pissed off about what they taught me that it's like, it's just been bamboozled by all this. And now, I mean, I look at everything. Once I hear something, I'm going to check it out to make sure what they're saying is truthful, because, well, we can't trust this administration for damn sure. And because they're just being so straight out, just slapping us in the face, and we're just standing there taking it, and no one's doing anything about it. Hopefully, maybe there's Congress that the House will do something with all this stuff, but just throughout history, it's all we were taught is what we had. You had the LA Times, you got your news information from there, and we didn't think, I didn't think that they're going to lie to me about what happened, but sure they did.
You know, you're definitely right. Oh, I just had a thought in my head, and then it escaped me.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I know. You were talking, I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then, my five-second brain kicks in.
Yep.
You know, when it comes to our government, we cannot put it past them. All of this.
Yeah, and I want to go back to the education stuff. You know, you look at the Common Core education standards, and that was implemented about the same time as the STEM education standards. And it's interesting because Common Core was really, really pushed. And Common Core was brought in during the Obama administration, and it was it's a practice based more on theory. And that's why, especially in math, it was driving parents nuts because there was no right or wrong way to get the answer. It was more about how you came about it. And that's when they started bending this, you know, paragraph of math, what math really is. Math is not 2 + 2 equals grilled cheese sandwich. 2 + 2 = 4. Okay, and so they've got Common Core education, which disrupted everything, and many states banned it. And in fact, there was just a handful of states that allow it. And then they segued over into STEM, which is science, technology, blah, blah, blah. Now, if you look behind the creators of STEM education, it's not educators, it's scientists. Now, I'm not saying scientists cannot be teachers, but this is National Science Foundation is moving forward with this. So you're right, Lorianne. Kids are not being taught, you know, cursive writing. In fact, I'd like to, you know, add to that. With all of the use, and I do use the little emoji cartoons and stuff, but I am receiving text messages from my husband of all people, and all I gotta do is look at all the emojis, and it's like, it's windy out, he's having a cup of coffee, and he's gassy or something. Oh, wait, it's still windy out. And it's like, my gosh, I'm married to a freaking caveman. You know, I mean, it's like the writing on the wall, and it's universal. Anybody could look at these emojis and kind of go, oh, this person's having some coffee, and everything. It's universal. And this is not, and I do not believe that this mistake, I believe it's by design. And what's your in that one world order?
Like, you know, back when
exactly.
Early
that's
humans
what I said.
Used to just like write symbols on the wall, like pictures on the wall to communicate. And
yeah,
like,
that's what I
we're
said.
We're like right back at
I'm
that again, where we can't talk in words. We talk in these little emojis.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I'll be driving and I'll get a text message and I'll listen to it because, you know, the car's telling me and I'll be like, so-and-so sends 2 goldfish. 2 + 2 = grilled cheese sandwich. No. But, you know, and then the Surrey person's telling me what these emojis are, and I don't even have to see the picture. I know what the message says. And it's like I said, you know, it's like we're reverting back to caveman days here. So, but this is by design. It's not by sheer laziness. It's a reprogramming of our brains in a not so subtle matter to comply, to get ready to speak a one world language, to fall into lines, you know, here's your placard for today. Chinese guy will hand it to you, and you'll go back to your little cell, and it will have break rock, get 2 grains of rice, break rock, and there's all these pictures because you don't speak Chinese. No, seriously. I mean...
Well, you know, and one thing before it exits my brain in 2 seconds, you know, talking about, like, not teaching math. Well, if somebody is not proficient in math, right, if our schools get so bad where they're not teaching math, well, guess what that's going to lead to? An even worse healthcare crisis.
Well,
because if you don't realize, I know, I have taken organic chemistry. Organic chemistry is a requirement, prerequisite for going into almost any healthcare profession. If you want to be an RN, if you want to be a doctor of any kind, you got to take organic chemistry. And you know what organic chemistry is? A whole crap ton of algebra problems. That's what it is. Equations to figure out molecular blah, blah, blah. That's what organic chemistry is. It is, oh, my God, insane algebra problems. And so if our education is so bad that we have so many kids not proficient in math to the point where even my past former Governor Brown put on hold math being a requirement for graduation, then that is going to impact our healthcare system. Since that is a requirement, proficiency in math means passing organic chemistry, which is required to be an RN or a doctor or anything like that. And so, you know, that's one of those downward impacts that is going to be crippling by not requiring math proficiency in our school. And, oh, and the reason why our Governor Brown put on hold for 4 years requiring math competency as part of your graduation requirements is because it's deemed racist. Somehow, some way, our government officials and liberals have convinced us that somehow math proficiency is racist, and therefore we shouldn't require it anymore. Apparently, black people are incapable learning math and being competent in math, and so we have to suspend it. You want more black doctors? You want more black nurses? You want more black people in healthcare on every level? You're not going to get that if you don't require them to be proficient in math. Why? Because they have to understand organic chemistry is a prerequisite to getting their degree in just about anything in the healthcare system. So it's a backwards thing. It's like, oh, you know, that expectation, it is as racist as they come.
Yeah, you just want to keep them down still, huh?
Yeah, they want
to
keep them down.
We're supposed to lift them up.
Exactly.
Well, we got to lift them up. Yeah, just throw them on the field, put them out there, and they'll learn by themselves.
You're black, you're not able to understand math, so we're going to get you by and let you graduate and everything, but, you know, don't go into healthcare. We don't want black doctors and black nurses. That's the message they're sending.
I can guarantee you there's more abortion clinics than educational opportunities in a lot of those neighborhoods.
They're very good. Suzette went back to college. She wanted to get in when Obama started doing the whole recoding all the medical codes and everything. She wanted to get into it because it was open. And she went back to college. She started this online college, which was a farce. It was a program that was not set up to be where it was supposed to be, but they had actual classes. And I would listen in while she's in class because, you know, we did online. And the adults, I guess you'd say young adults, were just rude. They were, it was a madhouse. And I'm like, because, you know, everyone's in the chat room, like, with the teacher. And everything that the teacher was teaching, everyone that she had, they were telling you how not to do these things. How, if you have a, if there's a problem, this is how, you know, not, I mean, sorry. Instead of teaching you how to do them, they teach you how not to, to do this, how you correct it. It was the opposite way of teaching. And it was really quite confusing because she had to do the algebra. And she, you know, she was good at it, but not as good. And I had to help her with that. And I remembered all that stuff. And she asked the teacher, how come you're teaching us things not to do when you should be teaching us how to do? And he asked her to come back after class and they'll have a chat about that. And she did. And this guy ripped her into a new one about it. Don't you ever call, don't you ever ask that kind of question in my class again. Just reprimanded her big time. In fact, he was about to fail her just for her asking that. And she had a 3.9 GPA going. She was like 5 credits behind just to pass, to get her BA, I guess. And they said they were credited, but they weren't credited. So she spent 3 years of getting loan grants to do all this, and then they end up failing her and suspending her because of a program that she was supposed to get, a virtual program to learn more with the coding and other things. It was like a virtual, a new thing that they had done. She goes there. She lines herself up on the computer to get it all set up, ready for the class, 2 weeks before the class. And when it came the day before, she wasn't able to get in the class. And she had the tech support come in. We bought a new computer. Couldn't figure out why it wouldn't accept her. So they had to fail her, but they gave her an incomplete. So they said, you can come back next semester and do this all over again. So she has to wait a whole time. She goes back.
Oh, my God.
And it did it again, and they suspended her. Never gave her a reason why, suspended her, and they said they're looking into this whole situation. This is like 10 years ago, and nothing has happened. And yet we get all these grant money, or all these money for her books and everything, for loans that she took out. And she was 5 credits from passing. But again, it was a farce. And the person that she talked to that got her all set up, her sponsor, I guess you can say, whatever that person is, just fully just flaked on us as if we didn't even matter. I talked to that lady. She was really nice. You know, hey, are you waiting to see Suzette come to Florida and graduate and this and that?
Yeah, put her in debt and, you know, all to, you know, shy of 5 credits and deny her the degree.
Five credits.
My God.
Oh, yeah. It was, and I mean, she, but these kids, though, that were in there, you can tell, that what is it called, affirmative action may have played a little role in this one because their attitudes and just the way they present themselves was so embarrassing. And it was like, quickly, I mean, it was just odd that a young adult would act like they were. And I felt bad because I was listening, you know, I could just listen to a class and everything. And I think you can't ask questions without someone raising their voice and over-talking and stuff. So, I mean, these kids are going in that field, the medical field. And it's scary.
You know, and it's funny because, like, you know, my mom even asked me, she's like, how come you never go to the doctor? Do you have a phobia about going to the doctor like you do the dentist? And I'm like, well, actually, yeah. You know? And it's just because it's not like all doctors are bad or anything, but I just, you know, I can't help but, you know, think about going to the doctor for something and looking at that doctor and going, how influenced are you? Like, how many continuing education courses are funded by Pfizer or J&J or Moderna or, you know, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, how indoctrinated are you? And, you know, it's really, you know, I don't go to the doctor because I just can't trust it. You know, how do I gauge a doctor that, you know, isn't going to end up poisoning me? And it's not on their own fault either, though. You know, this is their continuing education. This is reality for them that, yes, you know, all these Pfizer products or J&J products, you know, are very promising and all this stuff. But their continuing education credits to keep their licenses are funded by these big pharma companies. And, you know, you can't overlook when it comes to what drug they prescribe you, how they diagnose you. If they're getting incentives to diagnose more people with such and such disease so that, you know, they can prescribe such and such drug, you know, that they're getting kickbacks for. You know, like that's why I don't want to go to the doctor. It's just, you know, I'll go in there if, like, you know, I severely cut myself and I might bleed to death, or, you know, I get super, super sick to the point where, you know, there's no taking care of it myself, but I am really reluctant. And I mean, am I crazy for being that paranoid? I mean, I don't really think so.
Not one bit. And you're right. And one thing I hear with President Trump, when he's so happy about getting the vaccine out so quickly, is like, he should shut up about that, because they have no idea how what's going to do to people. And look at these people. People are maimed, or they're dead. I mean, that it's killing people. Like myself, I'm nothing against vaccines. I think they're great. But did you really know how much they work, especially in this short time? You had COVID, 2019, 2020, it's going rampant. All of a sudden, bam, we got a vaccine to cure you. No way. There's no way they have it that quick. And that's...
Oh,
you know,
exactly. I mean, I'm talking, you know, and I think you're talking about traditional vaccines where...
Yeah.
You take a dead or inert, you know, actual part of it, you know, whether it's bacteria or virus, it's dead or it's inert, it's not going to infect you. But, you know, you're taking an actual thing, introducing it in a non-infectiatory way, you know, can infect you, but it still trains your immune system to recognize it and be able to respond to it once you encounter the real live thing. That I'm not against. But vaccines now, with the advent of mRNA, now the push is for more and more and more of it. mRNA this, mRNA that. They want to do mRNA, they want to do a combo of mRNA, COVID combo flu shot. They want to do mRNA inoculating you in your vegetables, which is why Bill Gates is buying up all that farmland. They want to do mRNA in your meat. So they, you know, they mRNA the cows and shit so that the hamburgers you eat, you're getting inoculated.
Yep.
There, this mRNA is, you know, it actually is a loophole, because it's not directly genetic modification. It's mRNA, you know, spike proteins and stuff. And so that's the loophole in the laws, because it's not really genetic modification. So they don't have to apply the same laws for genetic modification. See what I'm saying? And disclosures.
Yeah, no,
and
right,
stuff.
Right. That's why they shut down Dr. Loverman Loan. Right. It's working good too, because it's getting in everything, and it's scary.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things I was talking to V, I don't know if you guys remember V, she was my original co-host when I started my Lucid Libertarian show. You know, she calls in when she can once in a while, and she's awesome. But, you know, I was seeing even with her the other day that this loophole is exactly what will allow them to put this in our produce and our meat without labeling it, you know, because it doesn't apply. By not having it directly modify the gene, because it's RNA, you know, RNA, mRNA,
mm-hmm.
that is a loophole for labeling laws. So we could be, you know, buying our lettuce and our celery and our carrots at the produce and our grocery stores, even organic, because organic doesn't allow for genetically modified organisms or, you know, and since it doesn't apply to that, you could even be buying your organic and it could be inoculating you. Because there are no laws that apply to labeling if it's been infused with RNA inoculation.
Well, organic's all on Monsanto. Yeah. But all organic food is all Monsanto.
We won't even know.
Right.
Organic isn't even safe.
No,
they're gonna introduce
not.
This shit, and it's going to be put off over and over again because of lobbyists. To create any laws that require labeling if there's mRNA inoculations in this against COVID, against flu, against cancer, against, you know, whatever the hell they decide to apply mRNA inoculation to. You don't know what you're going to be getting until there's laws and those laws pass and then get implemented. So that you can totally see Congress passing laws saying, okay, if your, you know, produce or your meat is infused with mRNA inoculation, you have to label it, but you don't have to start doing that. We're going to give you 3 years before you actually have to start doing it. So meanwhile, everybody in their grocery stores are buying their lettuce and their carrots and, you know, their hamburger not having to be labeled if it's inoculated with mRNA inoculations for COVID, flu, you know, whatever they decide.
Well, you know, over in England,
isn't that scary? Isn't that scary?
Yes,
like,
that's scary.
Look
that's
at the
scary
reality
too.
Of that. That
right.
is scary. Because there are
England,
no laws, and then they will put off implementing any laws that do pass and give, because we got to give the manufacturers and companies time to, you know, implement this, so we're going to give you 2 or 3 years to be able to implement it. Meanwhile,
right.
everybody's consuming it.
Yeah, it's already in
there's
the system.
There's no avoiding
and when, you know, I mean, once they take out yellow number 5, we're screwed. When they took the gluten out, and I'm not happy with that, my body needs the gluten. I mean, just because there's a few that can't handle it, now I can't have it anymore. I mean, that's another one I'm just really upset about. But once they take out yellow number 5, then we're really screwed. Our bodies will shut down big time. And you know what? Over in England, they don't put expiration dates on the food anymore. And that may happen here.
Well, expiration dates I can see for some things that actually do spoil, but I think it was, you know, last week I mentioned, like, what is the point of putting an expiration date on salt? You know, it's mined from salt mines that have been there for thousands and millions of years, but has an expiration date. Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, the very thing that preserves meat, you know, you salt the
yeah.
meat if you store it for long. You make jerky out of it or whatever so it can last a long time before it goes bad. You know, some of these expiration law requirements are just so stupid when it comes to things like salt, you know?
That's true.
How is that going to go bad? Yeah. Yeah, it's more money.
Yeah.
You got to toss out this salt because it expires. You know, it's fucking, sorry.
Exactly,
it's salt.
Because people are not buying
you know?
The salt. But,
salt
but people
doesn't
stop
go
buying
bad.
Salt. Well, you know, you haven't
okay,
seen
just
salt
one thing?
In your cupboards for years, and then, you know, you never thought about, oh, this has been in there probably about a good 20 years. Put on your food. I'm not sick. I'm not dying. So not enough people are buying salt. So now we got to put expiration dates, man. It's only good for 2 years. You know?
We have to remember like, that we live in a society that has to have contents maybe hot on a hot cup of coffee.
Yeah. There's lawsuits. People didn't understand. That's funny. That's right. You know, slippery when wet, of course. Good point.
Yeah, we've done, it wasn't just the government that dumbed us down. We've done it to ourselves.
And in different languages, too.
Yeah.
Make sure you put in different languages on there. Yeah, that's another important thing. We don't watch TV no more. I mean, the other night when I was at the hospital, I was watching Channel 7 News and what was going on, and I was just like, oh, my God. And the commercials are just terrible. I mean, there is the quota they have to pass for everything. You have to have mixed couples. You have to have a homosexual. You have to have what's the other one? Empowerment of women. I mean, it's just, I don't know if you, I was just like dumbfounded about the message that's out there. The movies. I don't know how many, I mean, I have nothing against
yeah,
women.
Yeah, they got to wokeify it. They're remaking all of this stuff to wokeify it, you know, and it's
yeah,
like,
I mean, you feel empowered
wait
by
a minute,
all this,
you know.
Women? But does
like,
it make you feel empowered,
okay,
though?
Why do we have to change everything? You know, they want to make Wendy from the Addams Family a bisexual, you
oh,
know.
Crap.
Or, like, a unisex. Yeah, like, that's what they're gearing toward. Like, they want to, you know, and I actually really like the new Netflix series. But you can see where it's going, where they're going to make Wendy of Addams Family be like a bisexual or a, you know, something or another gender, and they're going to wokeify that as well.
But the bisexual thing
I call
is...
it wokeify. We got to call it wokeify. Wokeify everything.
But for a person to be bisexual, it's like, okay, so you go both ways, so that's great. Why do I have to know that?
But yet, no, that's not the point, though. It's not really about bisexual. It's Wendy from the Addams Family, you know? She is a young teenager.
A child.
You know?
A child.
Why
yeah.
does she have to be bisexual? She is a fucking
why
child. Exactly.
Lorianne. Language.
All right. Well, we yeah. are in overtime, and it's not a part of the
yeah.
recording now. So
I know.
It
I see that knock on the door right now. I think I got a couple guys
yeah,
that keep going on
the door.
No, it's getting too crazy. It's just,
go ahead, Dolph.
I mean, out there, just everything's twisted. Anyways. Well, thank you for taking my call.
Always.
It's on such a great conversation at the moment. But I got a furry one right
yep.
here that needs to go outside.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We're just about ready to wrap it up too. Go ahead.
Hello? That Don and I are praying for.
That's a good night, ladies, and thank you again.
Thank you. Good
yeah,
night.
Definitely. It's been really enjoyable. Thanks for calling in tonight.
You got it. Glad I got the call. And I'll talk to y'all later.
And you're welcome right. on Sunday night, too.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. To see how my Sunday turns out to be. Hopefully it's a good Sunday for her to come home. Or we got good news. So we'll go from there.
I hope so. Yeah, definitely give her a hug from me. And I'm thinking about her. And come home, be well, and recover, do whatever
yeah,
you can.
Let that dog out for the love of God. Pray, please.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, really. Kelsey, she would love being in this conversation, I'll tell you that. Okay, good night.
All right, good night.
Good night.
All right.
Good
so
night, my friend.
We're just about done here. We've got just a couple more minutes left on the clock, and I want to thank Cinnamon, Donnie, thanks for tuning in. It was great having Robert. Lorianne, as always, thank you so very much. It was a great show. I hope people, you know, listen to what we have to say here. We're not just wasting our time. But, yeah, we're at war. We're Toastola if we don't wake up and... You know, a handful of us are awake. I guess y'all come to Alaska and hide on the island with me.
Well, and
we
I know
to.
That you are at the top of my list of places to go when, you know, the S hits the fan.
Yep. Oh, that was one. That was one last thing I wanted to say before we get off. The WHO came out and recommended 15 medications that people should stock up on because in case of nuclear war.
Yep. Yep. And Biden administration stocked up on iodine pills.
Yep. Nothing already. Like ticking that clock, just another 30 seconds forward.
Yep. We're selling our strategic oil
to China, while also stockpiling all of these pills and readiness for a nuclear bomb going off.
There's plenty of fentanyl in America. There's no baby formula. There's no food on the shelves. You know, no essential insulin medication.
I would rather die of a quick fentanyl overdose than radiation poisoning from nuclear war over like a month.
There you go. That could be what the whole. Good Lord. Oh, that makes a sick little circle.
Well, I mean, well, then why are they want to take our guns then? you know, a quick shot or a quick shot.
It can be used against them.
Yeah,
well here we go. Fentanyl-laced bullets. So not only do you shoot somebody, but you dip the bullets in that are overdose amount fentanyl-laced. And one way or another, if the bullet itself doesn't kill you, the fentanyl will. Use that tactic.
Yeah.
Fentanyl-laced ammunition.
Well,
oh, sorry, I shouldn't have said
that.
I'm not planning
like
this. I don't advocate
yeah.
it, but... If a normal, well, I'm not normal, but if a mind like mine can think of it, then think of somebody that is actually really criminally minded and really psychotic and sociopathic. If I could think of it, they can too, and, you know,
Good Lord, it'd be so easy to load into buckshot. My dad used to load his own shells. And that would be so easy to load in.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, the bullet might hit you in an innocuous spot, but that crap gets into your blood and you're dead anyway.
Yep.
Well, you could do it with mRNA, too.
I think Dahl is about to fall asleep.
Oh, you know, I'm physically laboring these days, 14 hours a day, you know, construction. It's not my trade, and I'm exhausted. I'm physically exhausted. This job is killing me, but...
Oh, I know.
I am determined to finish this house.
But your house is coming along, you know, like, the end is near, right? I mean, you got your lights put in.
It's a lot of...
Yeah,
I want to punch you right now. It's a lot. I've got a lot of work to do still. But I'm exhausted. Oh, I want to punch you. Don't say that I'm like at all the hard stuff, like putting the cabinetry together and making it fit against walls that are not plumb and things that I'm not a carpenter, but you know what? I am an Alaskan kick-ass woman, and when shit needs to get done, we find a way. And thank God for YouTube. You know, it's like, I'm not going to let Biden win. And that's what's happening, you know? I mean, shit. So it's good. But I'm exhausted. I really am. And I have a crew coming early, and I have to go meet a plane. All of our stuff, Cinnamon, comes in by airplane or boat. And the airplanes is like 4-hour drive. And had to go to the airstrip today. I got to go to the airstrip tomorrow. And work. So I barely made it home before the show started tonight because the roads are really icy. But, yeah. So I have a long day tomorrow. But,
sweet dreams.
All right. So... thank you so much, and thanks for calling in. I really appreciate it, and thanks for helping promote the show in any way you can. I really do appreciate it, and we're always happy to plug your guys' show on our own, too. Anything to get the truth out there.
Yes.
All right, guys. Well, ladies, good night, and good night, everybody out there. All right. Lorianne?
Good night, doll. Yeah, you
good
got
night.
Your days. Good night. Sleep tight.
You can punch me back.
I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna punch
oh,
you.
I wouldn't
I'll
have
let
punched
you punch
you.
Me. Oh, I deserve like, it. I'll let you punch me. I won't punch back. I'm like, okay, must have deserved that. I'll take it.
I'm teasing, but there's just so many little pieces to the job. It just seems endless. Every time I think we're just like cresting the peak, it's, yeah. One wrong piece and we're screwed. Or one lacking piece. So it's not, I don't have a hardware store. I'm kind of screwed. Anyway, so.
Yeah, I know. Everything for you
is
not easy to come by unless you make it yourself.
Yeah, I'm glad I have lots of bolts and screws and all kinds of buckets from all these years. And I was like, why does my husband keep all this crap? And I'll be like, oh, my gosh, the golden ticket. We needed this one. Oh, he's forgiven. So, all right, my dear.
Yeah, no
all
doubt.
Right, so everybody,
well, at least
we're not
you're
on air
iHeart
anymore.
Radio
so good night.
Now and Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah, I meant
so,
to
yeah,
plug that.
So, yeah, we can start
including
links and plugging that.
Yep. All right, my dear. Go. I am,
all right, hon.
I'm starving. I haven't eaten since yesterday.
I hear
you. So.
Oh, God.
All right.
Big hug.
Yeah.
Hang in there. But
big hug,
don't
good
forget
night.
To take care of yourself, too, my dear.
I don't have time, but I will be with you Sunday night.
Okay. I love you, hon.
It's a time. I love you, too. I'll sit down and eat then.
Yes.
All
eat
right.
Something, rest.
Good night.
Good night.